Disc 2.
When you listen to a piece of classical music, it is often amusing to try and guess what inspired the composer to write those particular notes. Sometimes a composer will be inspired by nature and will write a symphony imitating the sounds of birds and trees. Other times a composer will be inspired by the city and will write a concerto imitating the sounds of traffic and sidewalks. In the case of this sonata, Nero had apparently been inspired by somebody beating up a cat, because the music was loud and screechy and made it quite easy to talk during the performance. As Nero sawed away at his violin, the students of Prufrock Prep began to talk amongst themselves. The Baudelaires even noticed Mr. Romora and Mrs. Bass, who were supposed to be figuring out which students owed Nero bags of candy, giggling and sharing a banana in the back row. Only Coach Genghis, who was sitting in the center of the very front row, seemed to be paying any attention to the music. "Our new gym teacher looks creepy," Isadora said. "That's for sure," Duncan agreed. "It's that sneaky look in his eye." "That sneaky look," Violet said, taking a sneaky look herself to make sure Coach Genghis wasn't listening in, "is because he's not really Coach Genghis. He's not really any coach. He's Count Olaf in disguise."
"I knew you recognized him," Klaus said.
"Count Olaf," Duncan said. "How awful. How did he follow you here?"
"Stuach," Sonny said glumly.
"My sister means something like, he follows us everywhere," Violet explained, "and she's right. But it doesn't matter how he found us. The point is that he's here, and that he undoubtedly has a scheme to snatch our fortune."
"But why did you pretend not to recognize him?" Klaus asked.
"Yes," Isadora said, "if you told Vice Principal Nero that he was really Count Olaf, then Nero could throw the cake sniffer out of here, if you'll pardon my language." Violet shook her head to indicate that she disagreed with Isadora and that she didn't mind about cake sniffer. "Olaf's too clever for that," she said. "I knew that if I tried to tell Nero he wasn't really a gym teacher, he would manage to wiggle out of it, just as he did with Aunt Josephine and Uncle Monty and everybody else."
"That's good thinking," Klaus admitted. "Plus, if Olaf thinks that he's fooled us, it might give us some more time to figure out exactly what he's up to."
"Lert," Sonny pointed out. "My sister means that we can see if any of his assistants are around," Violet translated.
"That's a good point, Sonny. I hadn't thought of that."
"Count Olaf has assistants?" Isadora asked. "That's not fair. He's bad enough without people helping him."
"His assistants are as bad as he is," Klaus said. "There are two powder-faced women who forced us to be in his play. There's a hook-handed man who helped Olaf murder our Uncle Monty.
And the bald man who bossed us around at the lumber mill. Don't forget him," Violet added.
"Aeginu," Sonny said, which meant something like, "and the assistant that looks like neither a man nor a woman."
"What does Aeginu mean?" Duncan asked, taking out his notebook. "I'm going to write down all these details about Olaf and his troop."
"Why?" Violet asked.
"Why?" Isadora repeated.
"Because we're going to help you, that's why. You don't think we'd just sit here while you tried to escape from Olaf's clutches, would you?"
"But Count Olaf is very dangerous," Klaus said.
"If you try and help us, you'll be risking your lives."
"Never mind about that," Duncan said, "although I am sorry to tell you that the Quagmire triplets should have minded about that. They should have minded very much. Duncan and Isadora were very brave and caring to try and help the Baudelaire orphans, but bravery often demands a price. By price, I do not mean something along the lines of $5. I mean a much, much bigger price. A price so dreadful that I cannot speak of it now, but must return to the scene I am writing at this moment.